Blog Talk Radio.
WWNN, Pompano Beach.
I'm Ken Seeley from Intervention 911. Every Monday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you can listen to John Hollis and myself on Holistic Lifestyle Radio Show, Ask the Interventionist. Millions of Americans suffer from some form of addiction that affects the people that love them. I want to take this opportunity to help their families and friends understand the addiction and fight it with all the tools necessary and get their loved ones and them into a program of recovery. Again, this is Ken Seeley. I look forward to answering your questions live on Monday nights, 10 p.m., on Holistic Lifestyle Radio, Ask the Interventionist Show. Please call 888-565-1470, or you can also email your questions by going to holisticlifestylesradio.com. I look forward to hearing from you and fighting this war on addiction together.
The opinions expressed on the following sponsored program are strictly those of its host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its staff, management, or sponsors.
This is the Holistic Lifestyles Radio Show, brought to you by...
Your
Holistic
show will go live
Radio
in 5 seconds. 4,
every day on
3,
14,
2, WNN, 1.
Florida's Health and Wealth Network.
Log Talk
Radio.
For information
about the show and our sponsors, be sure to visit our website, HolisticLifestylesRadio.com. That's HolisticLifestylesRadio.com. You can also find us on our Twitter podcast, Facebook, and blogtalkradio.com. Now, today's program.
All right, welcome to tonight's show. And it's a pleasure to have everybody with us. My name is John Hollis. You're listening to Holistic Lifestyles Radio Show. We are on WNN 1470 AM here in South Florida. And, of course, that is on the AM dial, 1470. So if you're driving in your car tonight, you're listening to the show, you're going to have a great show. If you're listening on one of the feeds that we're feeding out to, maybe WNN Radio's homepage where you can link up and come right to WWNNradio.com and listen to the live feed from the radio station. Or if you're listening on one of the smaller blog talks or Facebook or one of the other interfaces online, we want to welcome you to the show. We also want to welcome intherooms.com. We also want to welcome, of course, MySoberScene and all the other social networks that are linked up to us right now listening. We want to take this time to, of course, introduce our guest tonight. Ken Seeley has been an interventionist for quite a while and working in the field of intervention, and he is, of course, Intervention 911, and Ken has... many interventions under his belt over the years. Ken, are you with us?
I'm here. How you doing, John?
Great, great. It was a great week. You know, I wanted to, first of all, let everybody know, the callers, the call we had from last week, Lady Mary, she never called us back. But, you know, we're going to talk about that tonight, Ken. We're going to discuss that. And I guess we're going to talk about, one of the things we're going to talk about is how easy it is for everybody to talk about wanting to change the family unit, but how it's really difficult to follow through sometimes.
Pretty sad. I mean, I see that a lot in my private practice, and it's pretty heartbreaking because we know the disease doesn't stop just because you feel like the urgency is lifted, but the disease continues to grow.
Mm. And do you see that, I mean, over time, you know, where a phone call like that, because it was I really expected her to call because she sounded that pumped up about it. But one of the things that I had to realize was maybe, you know, she couldn't get everybody else motivated. Maybe she's motivated and she just can't get everybody else to move.
Yeah, but all it really does is take one person to carry the torch. And, you know, and with professional guidance, you could, you know, move forward in fighting the addiction. And I've conducted interventions where there was only one person, you know, that worked with me on the intervention. So... It's not, you know, like it happens regularly, but when it does happen, we use what we have. You know, we don't just turn our back on that person because we can't gather the troops. We still do whatever we can. can to fight the addiction.
And I think, you know something, I think the more that the ongoing problems fester, the more that she's going to, you know, keep talking about it. And at that point, I think, you know, maybe she'll follow through personally.
Yeah, that's been my experience is, you know, and it's a great, you know, reminder for her when, you know, the next trauma happens within the family dynamics, the next, you know, emotional breakdown and the destruction of the disease. They say, wow, I talked to Ken and John on that radio show. Maybe I should call them back up. And let's just pray and hope that she remembers that because, or, you know, reaches out for some professional help and gets her sister the help she desperately needs.
And I think when you start looking at the child that was involved and all of the other things that make it like, you know, like intervention 911, you know, it's like 911, you know what I mean? No kidding, when you start factoring in kids into the equation, it gets a lot more abusive and it gets a lot more, you know, not that it's not abusive to begin with older folks that she's dealing with, but when you start putting the kid into the factor emotionally, mentally, who knows physically what's going on, it could be really a traumatic situation for the kid.
Yeah, I remember a few years back, one of the treatment centers that I worked with over like 150 beds, they said 80% of the admissions were children of alcoholics. So, I mean, it's a learned pattern and behavior. Not only is it, a gene, the disease, but, you know, it's a learned behavior. It's normal for them, and so they just follow that cycle. We got to do something to end the cycle, break that cycle, and that's really what we do with interventions is we help the families in a respectful, loving manner break that cycle and give all family members the tools necessary to live a healthy life. I mean, nobody's living a healthy life when the disease is in a family dynamic.
I agree. And, you know, I do need to make a couple of announcements, Ken. I wanted to bring you on, but I do need to make a couple of announcements. First of all, I am going to be broadcasting live on WNN 1470 AM. From Las Vegas, Nevada on Friday. I'm going to be out there. I'm leaving tomorrow, flying to Las Vegas for the holistic treatment conference that's going on in Vegas. You're going to be out there, Ken?
No, I wish. I love those guys. They're all great.
Yeah, we're actually looking forward to it.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun. Said hello.
Yeah, I definitely will. We're going to have a great time. We're looking forward to it. Right now they have over, 200 vendors that are going to be there, and there's like 40 keynote speakers in 3 days, so we're looking forward to it. A great way to pick up CEUs, too, if you're looking for them. So the good news is that we'll be out there. We'll be broadcasting live. I'm going to have on a bunch of guests from the event. Some of the keynote speakers are going to be on with me. Lynn McKnight from down at, Clapton's Crossroads of Antigua is going to be on with me. And, of course, they are sponsoring this hour with me and Ken, and we want to thank them for doing that. I also want to make the announcement and let everybody know, pass on the information. Me and Ken are going to be doing this every Monday night. You know, I was talking to I spent like about 4 hours with my sponsor over the weekend, Ken. And one of the things I was talking about was the show, you know, and I really hope the show is helping people, and, you know, this particular show, because I really believe that it's going to help people. And he said, John, it's just like, when you start a 12-step meeting, you just keep showing up, and if God wants people to drop in the door, they will.
That's a great way to look at it. Great way. I mean, it's how we do what we do. If it's meant to be, it will happen.
Absolutely. So one of the things that I wanted to discuss with you is the family dynamic and the denial of the family dynamic, because I believe that in a lot of cases, and I don't know this because, you know, I've been around a fraction of the time that you've been doing this and you've been in recovery, but that family denial is as strong as sometimes or even worse than the individual's denial.
Yeah, it's really difficult. You know, it's hard for me to understand because they don't have the drugs, the alcohol, the addiction that is clouding it. And yet they're still, you know, continuing to enable and support the disease staying alive. So it's really, really hard for me to, you know, understand how can they not, you know, take this this action in breaking the cycle. But yet it's like, you know, what you do is it's like when you have to do an intervention and participate in some of the healthy boundaries, I like to call them, versus consequences or ultimatums, you know, it's going against all your human instincts. So a lot of people are kind of just afraid to move forward because of that, and it doesn't feel normal.
Yeah, and it's the fear factor also, correct? That fear has to be overrunning them. You know, well, if I admit to him having a problem, then that means I got a problem too.
Petrified in fear, and they're going to take an action that they normally would not, and then, you know, how are they going to respond? Because it's so foreign for them, and they think it's going to make things worse. But again, we don't do it in a judgmental way. We don't do it from anger. We strictly do it with love and compassion and as a factual agreement that you are non-compliant in a program of recovery, and if you want to be a part of this family dynamic, then you need to be compliant. And if you're not, then there's some healthy boundaries that Al-Anon will teach you how to, you know, enforce and to put into place. But, you know, normally when I get a hold of the family members, they're not actively working a program of Al-Anon, so that's always highly recommended that they jump into Al-Anon and go to 3 meetings a week.
Hmm. Did you happen to see the Lois Wilson story last night?
No, I missed that one. How was it?
It was great. It was very, very powerful. And looking at it from my end, with my wife sitting next to me, I really understood. And I knew I had done a lot of work with people and family members looking for treatment for loved ones, and I kind of understood it. But I really understood it last night exactly what my wife had gone through with me. And the despair and the hopelessness, and then when I started to get, you know, better with and started to look at things differently, she still had the same mindset, so she had to change too, and she had to take that direction of Al-Anon and CODA and the different things that she went through to start getting better with her life too. So, but to watch that whole thing unfold for Lois Wilson last night on TV was just, it was incredible. So if you get a chance to watch it again, I absolutely recommend it.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to look into that because I got a lot of feedback that from a lot of different people that it was incredible. And it shows even from way back then the importance of Al-Anon and CODA about, you know, changing your view on your loved one with an addiction issue.
Well, that was in one of the main parts of this was how Al-Anon kind of grew out of, you know, Bill having his meetings. You know, Bill was having his meetings, and the wives were sitting outside in the cars. You know, they weren't doing anything but sitting there being sick, waiting for their husband. One lady said she actually, you know, got her husband there with a shovel. <You know? laughs> So I mean, here the reality is, and you know, and I know that, you know. Unfortunately, sometimes it takes a shovel for some of us. But again, you know, you can't continue doing that because you just get sicker and sicker.
Oh, yeah.
So what we're going to do right now, Ken, is we're going to go to our first break. And, of course, when we come back, you can feel free to give us a call at 347-637-3655. Or you can call us also at 888-565-1470. And, of course, we are 1470 AM. WNN Radio out of Boca Raton. We'll be back right after this message.
My name is John Hollis, and of course I'm with Holistic Lifestyles Radio. And we want to talk about Crossroads of Antigua, helping people take the first step towards change. Do you know somebody struggling with addiction to alcohol, prescription medication, or other drugs? Crossroads Center of Antigua provides comprehensive detoxification, treatment, and continuing care services within a holistic body, mind, and spirit approach to recovery. Founded by Mr. Clapton, Eric Clapton, Crossroads Center is recognized as one of the top 10 international programs for addiction services. Crossroads provides quality, affordable care for individuals and their families. Call now for a free, confidential assessment and speak with one of course, their admission counselors. Give them a call at 877-318-8834 or check out the website at crossroadsantigua.org. And remember, recovery is possible and is often life-saving.
My name is Joanne. I'm from Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, and I've been using Willard water for more than 15 years. My husband and I are very careful about our nutrition. We eat organic food, try to maintain a healthy lifestyle, and we drink Willard water every day. I'm 65 years old. My husband is 64. We're in fantastic shape. Willard water plays a key role in our good health. Willard water helps the body absorb more of the vitamins and nutrients we need for good health. It's also full of natural minerals. I'm here to tell you what thousands of others around the world already know. Willard water works. If you care about your health, you'll go out and buy some today.
To learn more about the benefits of Willard water, call us at 888-379-4552 or visit our website at drwillard.com. That's drwillard.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration, and Willard water is not intended to treat, diagnose, cure, or prevent any diseases.
Good mental health is key to a happy and fulfilling life. But when it's compromised by addiction or a psychiatric disorder, the only solution is professional help. Atlantic Shores Hospital is a private substance abuse and psychiatric facility offering a complete range of mental health services, including adult inpatient mental health care, adult inpatient substance abuse, dual diagnosis, and detox from substance abuse. Atlantic Shores Hospital has helped hundreds in our community to get on the road to recovery and reclaim their lives. Call Atlantic Shores Hospital today, toll-free, 888-771-2711. That's 888-771-2711, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Online at AtlanticShoresHospital.com. They're located at 4545 North Federal Highway in Fort Lauderdale. Atlantic Shores Hospital, serving South Florida for 20 years. Family members, you can't wait any longer. Call today, toll free, 888-771-2711 for a free consultation. Atlantic Shores Hospital, treatment for change.
You are listening to the Holistic Lifestyles Radio Show, brought to you by Holistic Lifestyles Radio Incorporated. For more information about the show and our sponsors, be sure to visit our website, HolisticLifestylesRadio.com. That's HolisticLifestylesRadio.com. Now back to today's show.
All right, welcome back. I want to thank our WNN 1470 AM listeners that, of course, listen to our 15 hours of shows each week. And we've got great shows, and one of them is happening right now. We get to be able to speak with Ken Seeley of Intervention 911. If you go to HolisticLifestylesRadio.com, we built Ken his own page, and you can find out all kinds of information on Ken and how to contact him. You can link right up to his website. There's all kinds of great information at his website also, Intervention911.com. And, of course, Ken's always there to be able to, you know, take phone calls and answer any questions that you might have. You can link right up from our website. Sound good, Ken?
Sounds great. I'm excited.
So am I. And in the meantime, I have a couple other questions that I wanted to go over with you that were posed to me through the week. I had a couple of emails. One of them was, in particular, a grandmother that has been watching the son-in-law. The ex-son-in-law has custody of the children, and I guess the daughter is, you know, currently using, but the son-in-law is also, and she's in a legal situation where she doesn't feel that she can actually intervene with the children, with the court systems, because the daughter lost custody of the kids. Is that correct? Is there a way to be able to do that? And because there was a lost custody with the mother, because now the father's using.
So I'm not sure I understand. So what you're saying is that it's her daughter, and She doesn't want to intervene on her daughter?
No, the ex, I guess the husband and her daughter divorced. And after that divorce, the father got custody because, of course, the daughter was an active user. And the father got custody. Now the father's an active user. I guess he was in recovery. Now he's out of recovery. And the grandmother doesn't think she has any ways and means of being able to do anything legally because her daughter lost custody of the kids.
Oh, I see what you mean. No, absolutely. Yeah, she should definitely, you know, if it's an unsafe environment, like we were talking about the woman last week, if it's an unsafe environment for the kids, then, you know, absolutely she should take action and maybe get child protective services. But, you know, you really can't throw that into the mix, and I would never recommend that unless if I, you know, was working with the family and knew all of the case history. I wouldn't want to just say, oh, yeah, call child protective custody, and then all of a sudden the kids are taken away from their father, and their father's having a beer a week. You know, and she's doing it to, you know, just get control of the grandchildren. So, you know, I would really need to know more about the case before giving an honest opinion on that one.
And again, I'm glad that you said that because there are certain situations and emails that we receive or texts that we receive or anything that's being chatted online that sometimes more information is needed. And if you want to give a call in, you can call at 347-637-3655, or, of course, you can call us at the 888-565-1470, and you can ask Ken any questions that you want. I know it's a little bit easier to shoot us a chat, and hopefully we get an answer that way. But, you know, for some of these questions, you can't really chat them. You have to, you know, give more information as we go through it. So the understanding, though, of having a family member in that particular situation where if you had a child that was in danger, you would put yourself in a position as the interventionist to find out more information from the mother and anybody else that you could get information from to find out what your recourses could be, and that might be one of them going to DCF or something like that.
Absolutely, and that again is another healthy boundary that we put into place, because we don't want these kids, you know, being tormented by this disease. And I would highly recommend that you get, you know, child protective services involved if the parent is an addict in their addiction, you know, and get a grandparent, get another relative, get somebody that's healthy. But again, as long as they're not willing to get treatment and into recovery, you know, if they're willing, if you have a sit-down meeting with them, you know, and intervene on them and say, you know, we want you to get better, we want you in recovery so you can be a healthy parent, then so be it. You know, let them get into treatment. Let them start their program of recovery. But if they're non-compliant and they are using, then it's not safe. It's not fair to the child, and we as society need to make sure that these children are taken care of and in safe environment.
Absolutely. And we have a caller on line three. We got Jennifer. Jennifer, it's you're on with us. Jennifer, how you doing tonight? Hello, Jennifer. Hold on 1 second. Looks like we lost the line, Ken. Just give me a second here. Jennifer, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
All right, great. And I understand that you're going through some family issues. It looks like you're going through family issues with your brother. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm afraid I am.
Okay, and what seems to be the problem with your brother and what's going on?
Well, I'm not sure what the problem with my brother is, but he's involved with drugs, and to be honest, I can't even tell you where he is. We haven't heard from him since the last time we had his children.
Okay. Can you hold 1 second, because I think you have another family member on the line, too. Hold on 1 second. Hold on 1 second. Kathy, is this Kathy?
Yes, it is.
Hey, Kathy, how are you? I have Jennifer on the line, and I guess you and Kathy are dealing with your brother. Is that correct?
Yes, we are.
Okay, and Kathy, Jennifer, we're all on the line with Ken Seeley. Ken, this is a family that's going through problems with their brother, and why don't you give Ken some information? If you try to talk all at one time, that's not going to work real well. So if you want to, Kathy, if you want to take the lead and just give him some information, and Jennifer, you follow, we can go with that, and then Ken can answer your questions.
That'd be fine.
Go ahead, Kathy.
Hi, Ken. Hi, Ken.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. This is a deal with my brother. I'm actually in recovery myself. My sister-in-law, Jennifer, that's on the other line, she's actually been the one that's always picking up the pieces. She helped pick up the pieces with my kids and basically had to raise my kids for a while I was out there. And now she's doing the same with my brother's kids. And the problem that we run into is that my mother is a big-time codependent. And my mother enables him, and she continues to do so. To my knowledge, right now my brother is on some type of probation or something like that, but he really won't go for any type of help, and I'm really concerned that he's going to end up with big, severe problems later on.
Okay.
Jennifer, what would you like to say also? Would you like to follow up with that, Jennifer?
Well, yes, I'd like to follow up with that and say that also one of the big problems with my brother-in-law's addiction to his drugs and other people in this state is the easy access to these pain clinics, which seem to be just loading these people up with 3 or 4 prescriptions for, you know, people that I know that have had cancer aren't getting these drugs, and yet these... people, I have a sister myself who lives in Georgia. She drives all the way down here to Hallandale Beach Boulevard to a pain clinic and drives back to Georgia. We got to get rid of these pain clinics. You know, that's not going to solve the whole issue, but as long as these drugs are so readily available to him, he's going to keep doing them.
Well, that's another show. I agree. I agree with you 100%, but, you know, that's a whole other topic, and it's heartbreaking to watch. And I think Florida is the leading prescription drug-writing state in the country. So it's pretty bad down there and devastating to watch, especially how many kids are dying from the overdoses.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, in a year there was like 6,000 people in Florida alone that overdosed and died on prescription drugs.
That was the last number that I seen, absolutely.
Yeah, so it's devastating. I mean, I love the way it was put, that if it was any other disease, if it was a flu that was out killing that many people, you know, we would be out there doing something about this. But because it's prescription drugs, everybody's just sitting there by the wayside and saying, oh, something should be done. And so I agree with you. I think something should be done. But unfortunately, I don't think anything's going to be done quick enough and able to save your brother here. So the best course of action to save an addict that is in their disease, and no matter if it's drugs, alcohol, or whatever it is to do a family intervention and create a scenario that he would – what's his first name?
Joe.
So that where Joe would say, I would rather be in compliant with a program of recovery than not be in recovery and face these consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be difficult because, as you stated, your mom is not willing to put consequences into place. And if you're an active addict, you always find that weak link. You know, I like to call it, it's the one that's the most codependent, and stick close to them. And really, I'm upfront and I'm blunt about it, and I let them know you might as well be signing their death certificate, because that's the reality of where they're ending. You know, this disease ends up in two places, either in prison or dead. So when you choose one of the two, you know, I would rather choose prison if they're not going to choose recovery. But my job as an interventionist is, you know, that old saying, that saying of you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And so many people say that, you know, to me regarding interventions, you could, you know, you could present recovery and treatment to them, but you can't make them surrender to it. And my job as an interventionist is to get them damn thirsty enough that they will surrender.
Uh-huh.
And I got to ask a question here. You said something, Kathy, that kind of sparked my interest. Did you say he's on probation?
I believe it's the last time I checked, yeah.
Okay, so him being on probation, is that a way to be able to gear an intervention with the probation department, Ken?
No, I believe that was it. I believe they already attempted that at one point, but see, whatever he's doing legally. He has prescriptions for everything
mm-hmm.
he's doing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay, so he gets prescriptions, and the DOC, Department of Corrections, has it on a list of medications that he's using, so he gets away with it.
Yes, sir.
That's scary.
So common. I mean, it is so common right now, and actually the law is protecting people with that because they have a prescription.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, the law, you know, the system is broken, and while the system is broken, like I said, we don't have time to fix that right now, but mm-hmm. what we do have time is to fight the addiction. And, you know, and see, because it may very well be that he is, you know, in compliance with his drug treatment from his doctors that he's getting these medications from, but I'm pretty sure that most people that are in their disease, I don't care if it's alcohol that's, you know, legal or prescription drugs that are legal, most people that are in their disease do break the law in some different avenues. You know, how do they keep the prescriptions coming in? How do they keep the doctor's office? How are
right.
they, you know, where are they getting the money to go see these doctors? You know, is there something, are they, you know, pawning? You know, I see in, you know, down in Florida, there's, you know, pain clinics everywhere, and right next door there's pawn shops. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, are they... Yeah, they're on every corner, too. So it's just a horrific system that people are stealing goods, pawning them off, getting the money to go see the doctor, getting the prescription, getting them filled, and they're overdosing and dying, bottom line.
Jennifer,
I want to ask a question. The question I would ask is, what about, the family? What is the family not supposed to be doing for him anymore so that we don't continue to enable him?
Well, the most important thing that I always like to do with the family members is get everybody unified. Everybody unified that you're either in a program of recovery, and I'm so grateful that you are in a program yourself so you know what a program really looks like. You know, it's hard to manipulate. It's just like you're not, there's no way to be half pregnant. You're not halfway in recovery. You either are in recovery or you're not in recovery. And you could measure that, right? I mean, you know that. You know when people walk in the room and they're at meetings and they're, you know, someone in and someone out. And if there's someone in, they're not in. They either are in recovery working their program with their sponsor or they're not. They may sit in meetings and think they're in recovery, but we know who's in recovery and who's not in recovery.
Okay.
And if your brother's not in recovery, with a family contract and not compliant with this family contract of working a program of recovery, working the steps with a sponsor, going to meetings, 90 meetings in 90 days, maybe doing outpatient therapy. But you guys come together as a family and make sure that you work with a professional on, you know, maybe he needs detox. I mean, you don't want to take him off the opiates and have him go into DTs, you know, and end up dying that way or, you know, getting some, you know, physical damage. So he may need detox. So that would probably be the beginning stages.
Ken, do you believe that at this point, and Kathy, it sounds like you're part of the question also that I'm catching is, you know, should they stop enabling, stop giving him money, stop, you know, backing his, you know, watching the kids and things of that nature, and, you know, supporting all of his bad behaviors?
What I would normally recommend is that you don't do any of that at first. The first thing you would do is, do you think that he needs treatment right now? Do you think he is to the point where he needs a medical detox and he needs, you know, 30, 60, 90 days of inpatient treatment?
Okay, let Jennifer answer that because he's already been like five times.
I believe that he does need to be in treatment, but he goes through treatment like he goes through underwear. It's convenient when, you know, when he's worn out his welcome at most everybody's house, he goes into detox. And the minute he can find somebody who'll let him sleep on the couch, he's not in detox anymore.
Yep, there you go. There's
it's,
the weak
you know,
link.
Just like his children, that was real convenient when he could run around with three children and say, oh, please help me. But now he doesn't have three children and people aren't helping him. That's exactly the point. He's not getting any help from the family of wealth without select chosen grandma. Other than that, the rest of us, the only time we see his kids are we go and get them so we can enjoy them. We take them places and we enjoy those children, and then we take them back home. We're lucky if he even shows up for an hour to see them.
Okay. So
and
now
it's breaking his children's heart.
Oh, of course.
But even that is not enough. You know, he's been in anger management. He has the most terrible anger, road rage. Whenever you confront him with anything, he just goes into a blow-up, screaming, all-out rage.
Okay.
So to sit and talk with him is just practically non-existent because he will just start screaming, jump up, walk out the door, and he leaves. Period.
Okay. Go ahead, Ken.
All right. So every single addict and alcoholic, you know, he's been through numerous treatment centers, it sounds like. You know, he knows the system. He knows the game. So what I would recommend at this point is that he would need more of a, like, a sober living just for the structure, maybe a medical detox if he's, you know, taking that many opiates. But what I would recommend is none of that taking course until we create a rock bottom. Because as you know, in recovery, every single addict that surrenders to a program of recovery has hit a rock bottom, right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Every one of us. Every single person that has, you know, long-term, short-term, that really surrenders to a program of recovery has hit a rock bottom. What I would like to do with you is help you figure out what is going to be his rock bottom. You know, it hasn't been, you know, like you just said, you just pointed out, you know, the breaking of the children's hearts. You know, that isn't his rock bottom. You know, coming back home in and out, you know, that isn't his rock bottom. Being on probation, that's not his rock bottom. You know, what is going to be his rock bottom? To help define what a rock bottom is, we come up with this theory that it spells out health, and this is what defines a rock bottom. And if you look at anybody in recovery and you ask other people or listen to their stories when they speak from the podium, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, when you listen to what happened, that was their rock bottom. And in all of them, what it breaks down to is it spells out health. Something happened to them regarding their health is the first one. You know, their liver goes jaundiced, and the doctor says, if you don't stop drinking, you're turning yellow, you're going to die. Most alcoholics go, oh, yeah, great, doctor, you know, I'll meet you at the bar. You know, they don't care when it gets to that point, right?
Right.
It really doesn't mean much to them. But for some alcoholics, as I've heard numerous times, you know, they coded on the emergency table and they overdosed again and they finally said, if I don't stop, you know, I'm going to physically die. And that's where they stop and they look at it and they say, okay, I need help. the second one, which is in the definition. If you go to Google and you Google the definition of addiction, you will see where it states the environment is a huge contributor if the disease stays alive or not. So your brother's environment is a huge contributor of either having him compliant or non-compliant in a program of recovery. So the environment, an emotional rock bottom, you know, gathering the family members and telling him how his addiction is affecting you. How old is his kids?
11, 13, and 15.
Yeah,
wow.
So they're at the age where they know how to verbalize and talk to him on how his addiction is affecting them. So that is powerful for kids that age to sit down and write their dad a letter and say, you know, this is how your disease has affected me. And point out, not in a judgmental way, not in an angry way, just, you know, this is the reality of my life because of your disease.
I have actually talked to the children about doing things like that, and they absolutely will not do anything of the sort against their father. They will not.
Well,
they will not speak against him. They just won't.
It's not against him.
But in their eyes, as children, it is against them. Their father tells them they're the only ones he has, and there's no way that they're going to do that. I can tell you that they will not do that.
Well, then they
never that is breaking their father's heart, and they will not do it.
Yeah, then they
care more about somebody's heart than he does.
Ken, go ahead. What were you saying?
Yeah, they haven't talked to an interventionist or, you know.
They have.
They have
been in counseling.
Okay.
One of them is in anger management, anger counseling. They still are not, they're just not going to do it. It's called loyalty to their parent. You can take an abused child, a beaten child, and 9 times out of 10, they are not going to speak against their parents. I don't care. They're just not going to do it. You have to be realistic about it, too. These are,
You're not hearing me.
I am hearing you.
No, because you're not hearing me, because we're not asking them to do anything against their dad. We're not asking them to do, we're asking them to help save their dad's life.
Right.
So if I was going to speak to, wait a minute. If I was going to speak to a child, an adolescent, and help them save their dad's life, I think they would give me the time to give them the tools on how to understand that this is not their dad's fault, this is a disease, and these are some tools that you could take action on to help fight your dad's disease and help him get back his life. So that's the way you approach these kids, where they're not going against their dad, but they're going to help their dad. That they're, you know, it's a different way of viewing things. And I think that, I don't know, it's difficult because I think you see it in a way that it's attacking the dad when it's not attacking the dad.
No, it's that I've had that very conversation with the children about talking to their father, saving his life, exactly what you're saying to me now, and they would not do it.
And how long ago was that you had that conversation?
Oh, what last vacation did we have? Easter.
Okay.
I talk to them about it every time they come here because they're angry every time I see them.
Okay.
Not at me. They don't act out at me, but you can just see them thumping the basketball out in the, you know, thump, all looking, staring at the ground.
Kathy,
anger in them.
Kathy, you were trying to say something. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think at this point what it is that the children are in denial because, see, my brother had custody of the kids for most of their life, and their mother was not present in their life. And when everything started going haywire, naturally it was the mother and the new boyfriend that got custody of the kids, and they were not real happy about that at first. They are, however, now doing very well and adjusting there, and obviously there's a lot more stability to their life than, you know, there was previously. However, you know, they're in denial, and especially the girl is, like, all about her daddy, and as far as that goes, Jennifer's right. They would never approach it. As a matter of fact, they act as though none of it has happened.
So, well, here's
I'm shocked to believe that they would just rather have watched their father die with this disease.
No, I'm shocked when a little girl says to me, "Why does everybody want me to hate my daddy?" in those words. And I told her, nobody wants you to hate your dad. We want you to help him and save his life. But she's still not going to write her dad a letter.
So here's, and this is what I'm hearing. Maybe I'm wrong, Ken, because you've been doing this a lot longer than I. But what I'm hearing is we're sitting here, we're going through this process, and Ken is giving some suggestions, and they're suggestions. And maybe just, you know, reapproaching it out of a way of, and I understand, Jennifer, that you're saying that you've already approached the kids and said, listen, let's do this out of love and compassion, not out of shaking a finger at anybody, just love and compassion, and it hasn't worked. But that doesn't mean because they've said no once that, you know, repeatedly going at them and suggesting it to them out of love for them and their father isn't something that should be done again. Am I wrong in saying that, Ken?
No, I think you're hearing what I'm trying to communicate, but I don't think they are, so you're right on.
And I think, you know, the overall big picture here is that, you know, if I take my own recovery and I put it into this position, if people had given up on me after one no from all of the people around me, I probably wouldn't be here.
Well, you're absolutely right. And if it had been one no, but it hasn't been. I've sent some emails. We have family discussions sitting on the back porch about why they're angry, who they're angry with. It's not just an approach to them one time.
Okay. So it's an ongoing
I would
thing.
Love them to
yes.
call
yes.
me right now, and I would tell them again, but they still will not do it.
Go ahead, Kathy.
Hey, John. I know, like, in my own personal life, in my recovery, it used to be that way with my kids. And then I guess my daughter was about 16 when all of a sudden my daughter got, I guess you would call it, very bold, and she basically told me exactly how she felt and, you know, sent me a few choice letters and basically let me know that I wasn't there for anything. And that did contribute to my bottom because that was the first time she had actually, you know, shut down to a point where she did not want to hear from me anymore unless I was serious. She didn't, you know, and I had to prove it to her. It wasn't like she immediately, you know, accepted me back. But it was a process. And, you know, prayerfully, that's what's going to happen with his children as well. Right now, I believe they're still in big denial. That, you know, they don't want to believe that their daddy is on drugs. They want to believe that, you know, daddy's okay and that, you know, he's had medical problems.
It's a tough scenario.
And I love what you just said. I mean, you just spoke out of an environmental rock bottom, you know, for the E in the helps, you know, that was part of your rock bottom. When you finally heard that message, it struck a chord in you and made you think, I would rather change than, you know, live in this, you know, emotional rock bottom that I caused in my disease. So it's exactly what a professional intervention is really all about. 80% of the people, after the letters, first of all, after everybody's unified, and that seems to be the biggest problem in this country, is getting people on the same page of wanting to fight the addiction, because everybody has their own viewpoints of the way it should be handled. And while we're in confusion, the disease stays alive. While we get unified, the disease doesn't have a chance to live. If we get unified and stay unified, the disease doesn't have a chance. But if we stay in confusion and, you know, and questioning the process, then the disease runs rampant. The disease runs the show, it runs the family, it holds everybody hostage.
And when the family splintered, too, like this, it definitely keeps that disease rampant.
Yep.
Well, here's the good news is that this much, pretty much most of us are unified, like my brother, my sister-in-law, Jennifer, my children. all of us have pretty much stopped enabling him at this point. Pretty much, we don't want to hear any of this stuff. Unless, of course, again, he wants help. And if he wants help, I'm always here to help by making phone calls, getting him in a place of recovery, things of that nature. However, what does make it difficult is that, you know, my mother, still on the other hand, will be there to enable him. And then through the financial distress that that puts her under, she will then come to the rest of the family members to help her. So this is what really causes a big problem.
Ken,
yep,
did you follow that?
I followed it, and, you know, and exactly as you put it, when it's splintered like that, that's where the disease stays alive. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I've been able to work with families in the past where, you know, even if it is splintered, we're able to, you know, I had this one wife that wouldn't give up on her husband. She had two kids, and she fought, and all the friends left and said, no, they're not going to help her anymore. And the mother-in-law left and said, they're not going to help her anymore. But me and her, by working side by side, by, you know, creating that rock bottom, it took 5 months to make it happen, but
mm-hmm.
it did work.
And it does, because I know when I finally had enough, my sister-in-law Jennifer and my brother were one of the first ones that were there for me once they saw that I really wanted it. And the bottom line is I believe that, you know, people would be there for Joey, too, if we saw that he really wanted it.
Absolutely. But the point being, with prescription drugs, usually by the time they want it, they're already gone.
Uh-huh.
People are overdosing every single day. I mean, 6,000 people a year, that's every day just in Florida alone, people are overdosing. So the natural progression of that disease is not the same as pure alcoholism, where it's
mm-hmm.
a slower progression and they reach out and ask for help. So
mm-hmm.
that's why I always recommend let's raise the rock bottom. So we got to, you know, a health rock bottom. We got through an emotional or an environmental rock bottom that you stated was part of yours when your daughter came to you. And then we have a legal rock bottom, you know, where, you know, like I said, even though, you know, it's prescription drugs or alcohol that are both legal substances, but they're still, you know, an addiction. Most people that are in their disease break the law in different manners. You know, maybe they're not doing street drugs, but they're breaking the law to get more drugs or selling drugs, or they're doing something illegal.
Doctor shopping and all the rest of the stuff.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I believe the bottom will fall out any day now, and it'll probably be a legal bottom. And I guess, you know, that's what the bottom line is going to be. And then at that point, we'll see where it goes from there, because pretty much that's where it has to go, because we've tried, you know, we've tried the treatment centers, the detoxes, we've tried the talking to, we've tried the enabling, we've tried all that. And I guess, you know, unfortunately, like myself, his bottom's going to have to be a hard one, and it's probably going to involve legal stuff.
And here's
know.
Go ahead, Ken. I'm sorry.
I don't think I'm being heard in this conversation. It's kind of strange because I'm trying to communicate and give tools, and I feel like, you know, I'm just getting shut down every time, you know, oh, I guess it's going to be a legal rock bottom. Well, you know, it's not. I'm explaining what the definition of a rock bottom is, and then what we do with that information is to raise it manually. Because if you wait for a legal rock bottom, is that what you really want? I mean, do you want him to do prison time? That's a legal rock bottom. I mean, I don't think that's the solution.
No, that's not what I want. But that's what I'm saying is that we've already tried to come together as a family to talk to him. He's already lost custody of his kids. We have no idea where he's living. He doesn't return phone calls. The only time that he does call is when he wants something. So, like, at this point, I really don't know what else left there is to do. I couldn't find him if I wanted to find him.
So, John, am I missing something here, or?
I think, I think what's happening, and from my perspective here, I'm listening to what's going on, and I see that Kathy and Jennifer have really put a lot into this, and I hear what they're saying, and I don't think it ends there, folks. And I, because you've done all those things, to just sit back and wait for his bottom to be whatever it's going to be, unfortunately, that can be death. It might not be a legal situation. God willing, if that was the worst, the worst it would be, that's a great thing. But the worst it could be is 6,000 people a year are dying. That's 16 people a day are dying from their addiction to prescription drugs. So if you're not motivated to take the tools to do something now to be able to intervene on the situation, and you said something, Kathy, that's really important. He's going to call you for something. And that's a time to be able to say, hey, listen, you know something? Why don't you stop on by and pick up that $20 and have everybody sitting there and ready to have a conversation with him again and really go to the mats with him to get him into a place of surrender. Am I correct in saying that, Ken?
150%. You're right on.
Okay.
So these are tools that you can use to do that, and Ken does it every day like that.
Okay.
Would you agree with that, Ken?
Yeah, that's what we do as professional interventionists is we want to create that and give you the tools that are necessary. I mean, I'm trying to, you know, I can't even get through the definition of a rock bottom without being interrupted and shut down on almost every single one.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to give you, number one, the information that these are the definitions of a rock bottom. And then normally when I give the family members the definitions, I say, okay, now that you know what the definition of a rock bottom is, what do you think, you know, with all of that information would be Joey's rock bottom? What do you think it would be? And whatever that looks like, let's start creating it in a manually. Let's start raising the rock bottom so we're not waiting for the natural progression of the disease because I know you guys, you know, you wouldn't be on this call if you didn't love him. You love this man and you want to see him get better, and I want to give you all the tools possible to do that, but we got to open up our minds here and say, okay, let's see what a definition of a rock bottom is, and let's, you know, listen to scenarios. Let's create scenarios, because when I work with a family, I don't go in with no cookie cutter and say, this is what you have to do. Boom, the stamp on the, you know, on the intervention and say, this is how it's conducted. I mean, every family dynamic and every addict out there is different. So we start with the foundation of the definition of a rock bottom, and then we come up with what Joey's rock bottom is going to be. And then we, you know, and then as John put it, we invite him in whenever we hear him, you know, tell him he's going to come get that $20. We have a room full of people in there waiting for him, of people that love and care and want him back and don't want to lose him to this disease. You sit him down and you say, we love you. We want you to get this help. 80% of the people, after hearing the letters from their loved ones, surrender and say yes. Only 20% of the time do we have to go into aggressive consequences. I mean, that's a huge statistic of people that are on the edge of their addiction that are ready to surrender but just need to hear it in a loving manner from their family members that this is how the disease affects me as your sister, as your, you know, sibling, as your child, as your friend, as your neighbor.
Guys, you're not going to believe this, but we are out of time. Why don't we, and again, you know, I'm going to make this offer to both of you. If you want, next week, feel free. If you want to think about this and draw about it through the week, you're more than welcome to call us back next week and pick this up, and maybe you'll have a more insight in what Ken was talking about. Ken Seely, Intervention 911. Ken, I want to thank you for the time that you've put into this show because it was great. And I understood and I understand what you were saying, and I also understood where their frustrations are at. And I think that they were voicing their frustrations and not able to hear exactly where you were going with it. But the good news is that I believe that this guy can be helped. And you guys do you feel like you'd like to come back on next week and discuss it more if that's something that would be open to you guys?
Sure. No, thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, again, if you're interested, you know, the door's always open, and Ken's always there to be able to help. I want to thank our listeners. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Jennifer, for calling in tonight. And again, if there's anything that we can do, you call us at the office at 877-799-8773. You feel free to give us a call, okay?
All right. Have a good night.
Okay. Thank you. Ken, thanks for a great show. We got 2 minutes left. We're on our way out right now. And, of course, we want to thank, of course, Crossroads Center of Antigua for making this show possible. And most importantly, we want to thank our WNN 1470 AM listeners that are listening here locally in South Florida. And we want to thank our Blog Talk listeners and all of the Internet social media at intherooms.com and all of the rest of folks listening to us all over South Florida. You have a great night, and we'll look forward to talking with you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Holistic Lifestyles Radio Show. This program is sponsored by Holistic Lifestyles Radio Incorporated. Join us every day right here on AM 1470 WNN. You can also find us on our Twitter podcast, Facebook, and blogtalkradio.com. For more information about the show and our sponsors, be sure to visit our website, holisticlifestylesradio.com. That's holisticlifestylesradio.com. All broadcast rights to this program are the property of Holistic Lifestyles Radio Incorporated. Rebroadcast of any portion of this program without express written consent is prohibited. The opinions expressed on this sponsored program are strictly those of its host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, staff, management, or sponsors.